This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
This is Indie Book Publishing, brought to you by Archway Publishing. My name is Brian Houston, and today we are talking with a young lady who has gone through a considerable amount of heartbreak and tragedy in her time, and she has chosen to share that story with us today in a book. It is entitled The Golden Thread, A Memoir. And the author of the book is Christiane Cates, and she is talking to us from her home in Los Angeles, California. Christiane, thank you very much for being with us. Happy New Year, first of all.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Happy New Year.
Thanks very much for doing this today. Let's talk a little bit about you, first of all. Give us a little of your background. Tell us about yourself.
Okay. I grew up in the Midwest. I'm a chocolate lover, a bit of an exercise fan. I have a daughter who's in college who's fantastic. And I've been a single mom for probably 10 years. I've been in Los Angeles about six.
Very good. Now, let's talk a little bit about the story that led to the book, The Golden Thread. You lost a son in a car accident, correct?
That's right.
Okay, well, go ahead and tell me about that.
Sure. You know, I like to sort of say that you never really know when 30 seconds can change your whole life. And it has been 12 years. So when I speak of it, and maybe for some people, it come off lighter about it than you would expect, it's because there's been so much good that has come out of it. So I want to preface that. It's 2002. I was driving a rural highway in the Midwest, and married with two kids and great jobs, and life really had it by the tail. And I ended up getting in, rear-ending a pickup truck. I had something in my eye, not a pickup truck, a dump truck. And I had something in my eye, and I was playing with the eyelash for what seems like 5 seconds. And crazy enough, my kids had their seatbelts on because I always required that. We had actually stopped to make sure they had them on. And my son had his seatbelt on, but for some reason, I think it's 5% of the injuries from seatbelts cause terminal injuries, and they did. So my son, who was 8, died, and my daughter, who I later found out snuck in a 2-mile period her seatbelt off, and she lived, and she was 7 so at the time. So that's kind of my journey, and the result of that often is marriage problems, depression and difficulties, and subsequently I divorced 2 years later. But I really want the message to be, hey, I don't know what your challenge is, but I never thought I would say this, but that experience really motivated me to dig deeper about what matters to me in life. What do you want to do with whatever you're facing that looks like there's no answer? And I just want to be sort of an encourager to somebody who really feels like they're in a tough spot. So that's kind of the summary. The fallout was really difficult. My husband had kind of went to drinking, and well, I did too. I was raised in church, so we were a very strong faith family. But I would say the first week we started having drinks at 3:30 on a Thursday afternoon because you're searching for some way to handle your life. And for me, that lasted about 2 weeks, and I decided that wasn't so effective. But, men deal differently, and some men will be the strong, and some women will be the one who can't quite pick herself up. And it just, really, people grieve differently. But anyway, I don't want to ramble on this and let you keep to your questions, but hopefully that gives you some background. And it's taken a few years to really focus in on what really matters and what do I want to do with this.
No, and you're not rambling on. This is fantastic information. Let me assure you, this is what we want from you. I have to ask you, at what point after your son's death did you decide that it was time to share your story in the form of a book?
Great question. I had no intention of ever being a writer. I got a C in college English. In my defense, I had 1,000 kids in my English comp class as a freshman. And so it wasn't something I focused on. I knew I wasn't a bad writer. But the crazy part of this story is that my son had, I don't want to call him premonitions, but that's the only term I can come up with. He, this summer, exactly a month almost to the day, we were on a vacation in a lake cabin camping area and went with other families. And he had wanted to see a cemetery up in the woods in the middle of nowhere, really the middle of nowhere. And I remember telling my husband at the time, you know, you guys go ahead and check that out. I'm going to go down to the lake. And he had never been to, my son had never been to a funeral before, Malik, and he had never seen a funeral, he'd never been to one. The fact that he wanted to go to a cemetery was kind of bizarre to us. There were a number of incidences that I talk about in the book that he was afraid he was going to die. During that summer, he talked to me about it within that month time frame, to the best of my recollection. And so, in a strange way, I guess, people said, you really need to write this book. And this is a crazy story. And the things you're telling me should be written down. And so I actually lost my job not too long before he died, which made the summer the juiciest summer. I lost my job in, like, April of that year, and he died in August. Mm. And I even had said to my husband, hey, I'm afraid that something bad is coming, and I'm not that kind of person, and I'm a real optimist. And he said, you know, I feel it too. And so other crazy pieces came together, and in retrospect, I just feel like, you know, maybe your life doesn't make sense to you, and you can't seem to make any connections between maybe all the setbacks that you've had. Maybe you've lost your house or a loved one really close to you. Maybe you've lost a job. Maybe you can't pay the bills. Hey, I totally appreciate that, and my place is really to lay down the honesty and say, you know, wherever you're at, whatever it looks like, you can find something amazing out of that. And so I wrote this book, and it took me 7 years of editing it.
Wow.
and sending it to a New York editor, Alice Peck, and she really helped me think through some stuff. So that different perspectives really helped make it a better book, I think.
Now, when you did sit down to start writing the book, was it a difficult process, or did the words just flow?
I have, I sat in a Starbucks on Saturday mornings because I had a day job. So I would sit in a Starbucks from like 6 a.m. to noon. And I think having people busy around you helped to deal with the difficulty and the digging deeper. I mean, I forgot whole sections, so I think people have their denials. When mm-hmm. somebody read it, they said to me, oh, you forgot the funeral section. And I said, oh, that's because I just don't deal with the funeral.
Sure.
And so I had to add that piece in. But yeah, I mean, it was really tough. I think I've read through it, I don't know, 12 times, maybe more. But I think it got easier as it passed. But yeah, I would sit in the Starbucks and try to not look like some girl glued to her computer and trying not to cry, and I would take a break. And but it's so meaningful to get the feedback that I'm getting. I feel like everything has a purpose. At the end of the day, there's a reason for every situation. And the feedback that I get is there's more inspiration than there is difficulty in this book. And it's difficult for a section to read, but most people say they couldn't put it down. For a girl who got a C in college English, that was not. I never said, I'm going to grow up and be this author. So I hope it inspires more than it takes you through this difficult section. But you kind of have to know what the bottom looks like before you can appreciate where you've had to come.
Well, then let me ask you this. How long did it take you, how long were you at the bottom before you were able to get the outlook that you have now, where you are so optimistic and positive about things? Did that happen in a short amount of time? What kind of bounce back time are we talking about here?
Great question, and I think it varies family to family. I have seen couples do amazing things. Clearly, we ended up divorced in the story. I think it's really individual, but somebody told me that it's like, I think it's like 5 to 7 years when you lose a child, and I thought, you know, kill me now. And I don't mean to sound too Pollyanna at the moment, because there were days where I thought, this is just too hard. And all I had for my life was a day job and a family of four and the dog and the picket fence, and I don't know how to dream again. So for some people, it takes you time to have the courage to say, I think I want more. I think I can get to point B. I think I can do it day at a time. And I think, I think I was nauseated in the morning when I woke up, probably for 3 months. Mm. You just kind of wake up and say, oh, crap, I have to do this day.
Right.
But my faith is really important to me, and I think you fill your life with the things that turn you around to a positive, or your alternative choice is to go under a bridge somewhere. I mean, honestly, you know, whatever your mechanism of recklessness is, you have that option, and I think I just decided I have a daughter, and doggone it, she's going to be better for this. And if I can use this to make a difference for somebody else who just doesn't know how to do tomorrow, then that will be enough for me. And slowly you kind of build that up, and slowly you get your dream back. And I remember praying and saying, you know, I don't really know that I have a dream left. I don't really know what you think you're doing with my life. And I had a lot of angry conversation with heaven. Mm-hmm. But I think that's what makes the book honest. Nobody's life turns out the way they planned. And I'll tell you the really big turning point. I got to speak for 10 minutes. And it was the coolest 10 minutes in front of an audience that was in the beginning. And someone came up to me shaking and hugged me. And I knew she didn't have to tell me her story, but she could relate. And another person sitting next to me that I barely knew patted me on the leg, and she said, this is, you don't even know this. I can tell you have no idea, but this is your purpose. So if you can take the most broken thing you have that you think is completely the biggest mountain that you can't breathe to get over that, you can't possibly climb it, grab your faith, make sure you fill your head up with all the positives that you can resourcefully do this, and dream again about what it could look like, what would matter. And I think that is the process in a real general terms.
Hmm. Talk a little bit about your marriage and the difficulties trying to keep things together after the death of your son.
Okay. I get torn here because everybody processes things different. So forgiveness was the number one piece for me, but I was an angry, angry woman when I think often there's blame. I was driving a car, obviously. He was not in the car. My husband at the time was not in the car. So when my son died and we had a daughter, he was very angry. And he was very distant, and he was extremely shut off, and he was not home if he could help it, 24 hours, 7 days a week. And that made me rejected, hurt, blamed, angry. And so you kind of go through your own processes, and people do it so differently. And I've heard the gambit, but this was just our situation. And I think at the end, I felt like he drank. I'm not sure what else was all involved because I didn't see him a lot. He did end up getting help in a clinic away from home, about 8 hours away, in a fantastic clinic in the Midwest that specializes in, you know, 24-hour care for a three-week period for his depression and his anger and his issues. And when he had the affair, I think this is so much more common, but I was raised in this church, Pollyanna, lovely universe of these things don't happen, and if you go to church, for sure they don't happen, and we all know that that is just a load of lies. And so I think I had this season where I asked God about that too, and I blamed him more for the self-blame that I put on myself for all of it. So long and short is I went to a lot of therapy to make sure that I could be there for my daughter. When I asked for a divorce, it was really more like, you know, I love you, but I can't save both of us, and I'll just have to save myself. And he did get help, and he's in a great space, and he's, you know, we actually live 1,500 miles apart, and he's doing really well, and we have a great relationship. But the kind of forgiveness that it takes to forgive yourself, to forgive somebody else for the only way they know how to deal with something, is probably, you know, one of the best-known tools in life. But I never really understood what that was until... Mm-hmm. And honestly, at one point, I crossed the line with a guy who was my best friend. And so now I am pointing the finger back at myself. And really candidly, in church, no one talks about this. So I think what makes my book really different is you can go to church and you can relate to this book. And if you don't go to church, you relate to the questions that I ask because they're really candid. And more often than not, and I mean this in a state of gracefulness, I'm super vulnerable here. But I'm hoping that if you go to church and you have ugly in your closet and you don't dare tell the person in the pew next to you or your pastor, then I hope you find yourself in these pages to know that that's why we get to our faith. That's why we grab onto God, because you really can't do this on your own, or you can try and see how that goes. So, and I mean, you know, if you're atheist, I get it. You know, this is just my process. And I think there's just a lot of good questions that may or may not get answered, but things we think about. I've had atheists read the book. I've had New Agers read the book. And one, the first person who read the book that said, look, I'm an atheist, she hugged me. And I said, oh, my gosh, you know, was the faith aspect difficult for you? And she said, no, I understood where you came from and what your process is, and I just love the story. It was a great, honest story. And so I think that's the goal. Authenticity, regardless of your faith background, I think it speaks to you regardless of where you're at with that. I have a number of Jewish friends who've read it and said they couldn't put it down either. So I want to lay that out there saying, hey, I have a really strong faith. If you do, fantastic. But know that the story stands, I think, with that as supporting background to my perspective and what helped me.
Very good. Now, how is your daughter doing?
She's fantastic. She's going to graduate early from college. She actually is working on the second book with me. She hasn't always been interested in that, but lately I've just seen her, now that this book's come out, seen her responses. She's an excellent writer and always has been. And so I think this is one of her gifts. I hope she pursues speaking, and she wants to help girls who go through low self-esteem, maybe had some family trauma, and she's just a really phenomenal human being. I have to say that I'm not taking all the credit. I think it does take a village, and I think there are some miracles that occur that you don't have control over that often work out really beautifully when you get on your knees, so to speak, and ask for some help with things you can't fix. But she's fantastic. She's happy. She actually told me recently she's the happiest she's ever been, which has taken her a process to get to. She has anxiety, and that comes from the trauma she had as a child, so maybe there's some listeners here who can relate to that. The marriage dynamics were difficult for her to manage and still are sometimes, or the divorce, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, not too different from a lot of listeners in that regard, and there's something different and special and hard about losing a sibling, that's your protector or the person you share your youth with. So I've seen her grow out of that.
Well, it's a fantastic story, and I admire the way that you've managed to bounce back and to use your faith to rebuild your life and your outlook and your optimism. Tell us where we can find your book. The name of the book, again, is The Golden Thread, a memoir by Christiane Cates, and it's published by Archway Publishing. So tell us where we can find the book.
Okay, and I want to clarify, my pen name is just K.Cates, and there are 10 or more Golden Threads on Amazon. Unfortunately, I did not research that, or maybe would have made more sense to change that title. But it is on Amazon, it is on Archway, it is on Barnes & Noble. There are numerous reviews. You can look at the first few pages if you go to Amazon. There's not, for whatever reason, as many reviews on Barnes & Noble. But there are quite a few on Amazon if you want to take a look and see if it's something that you're interested in. But, yeah, my pen name, since there are a lot of golden threads, you should plug in the K.Cates, C-A-T-E-S, and then it'll pop right up. It's hardback. It's available on Kindle Nook. It's also hardcover and softcover, which is sometimes harder to find for some reason on those website pages. But you can also find me at ChristianeCates.com. I am on Facebook, Christiane Cates author page. So that gives you upcoming events. I blog, people really like the blog, which also has just blown me away. Like, I'm just some mom that does a day job that she loves, but the fact that people really like the blog, I called my mom, I'm like, they like this. This is really cool. Who knew? So you can find me over there, too. And it also has buttons for purchasing the book on the website. I'm on Twitter at Chrissy Ann Cates, Pinterest. I have not done the Instagram yet, but those are all
what?
Ways you can find me. I know.
How could you possibly miss that daughter. When you've done all the others, you know?
I know. My daughter has to teach me some ropes on that. So she's more than willing. But I think, too, you can email me there at info@chrissyanncates.com. And I respond personally if at all possible. So, fantastic. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you very much for being willing to share your story, going through the trauma that you went through. I can't even begin to relate to the kind of heartbreak and sorrow that you had to go through with everything that happened in your family. But obviously you are making the best of what was a very traumatic situation. And we congratulate you on the response that you've gotten to the book and to your speaking and to your blog and all of that.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I hope you have a fantastic new year. And kind of as a closing thought, if I can, I just wanted to, you know, inspire anybody. Go find a ridiculous, audacious, outrageous life and faith and run with purpose with whatever's staring you down. You really, if you give yourself the time and the grace, you probably will find it's the most valuable thing that ever happened to you if you can twist that the right direction. So that's kind of my thought process. I'm a firm believer in that, and that's certainly what happened with me. But
well,
hey, thank you so much. I appreciate you, Brian.
It's served you very well, Chrissy Ann. Thank you so much for being with us. Chrissy Ann Cates, again, K. Cates is the pen name. The title of the book is The Golden Thread, a Memoir. It is published by Archway Publishing. Be sure and pick up a copy of the book, and then be sure and contact Chrissy Ann and let her know how you like the book and any thoughts or feedback that you have. I know you'd really appreciate that, right?
Yeah, I would. I would love that.
Fantastic. Hey, thanks again very much. Happy New Year to you, okay?
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
This is Indie Book Publishing, brought to you by Archway Publishing. I'm Brian Houston. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Congratulations on being the proud owner of an adorable, soft, cuddly, sweet-smelling, smiling, cooing, hungry, tired, gassy, screaming little bundle of joy. So now what? Where's the owner's manual for this thing? Where are my instructions? Right here. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Infant care specialist Blythe Lipman has worked with babies for over 20 years and works extensively with new parents, providing workshops, in-home visits, tips, and daily phone calls to ease those frazzled nerves. With Baby and Toddler Instructions, you can get the advice you need on how to survive and enjoy your baby's first year. For more information on Blythe and how she can help you, go to babyinstructions.com. From 32 ways to stop a baby from crying to 14 ways to get a baby to eat and so much more. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Trafford Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book today is one that should be of interest to many sports fans out there, especially if you're from Canada, as I am. The title of the book, The Hockey Method, Volume 1, Beginner Skating and Beginner Puck Control for Parents and Instructors. Our author who joins me from Edmonton, Alberta, is Bob DeLaSalle. Bob, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning. This book is an extensive read. You have apparently a lot of information and knowledge that you are wanting to pass along. How did this book come to be written?
I'd say just evolved over time, working with beginner skaters and hockey players over the years.
Now, are you, in addition to being an author, is this your primary focus, is coaching?
No, I'm actually a retired technologist, and I've coached for 25-plus years, and I used to teach coaching clinics across the province of Alberta.
And as a hockey coach and getting into hockey, were you always a hockey player, or is this something that developed later in life? Is this something that's an extension of your life pursuits?
It kind of developed over time. I never did play much hockey as a youth, and that's how I started trying to figure out how to skate, how to play hockey from scratch.
This is an extensive read and very thorough, 440-some pages. How did you come up with a format to write this book? Did you sit down and have an outline that you began with, or is this an extension of your teaching skills that you have developed over the years?
So it came by trial and error over time, working with many kids. Basically, it's just a method of, there are thousands and thousands of skating drills out there. So this is just a method of organizing all of those thousands of drills into a usable format that any parent or any person can follow. And in fact, the drills that are used are so simple that any parent, even though they don't skate, even though they don't have skates, they can actually teach beginners how to start.
You've included in your book photos and other concept pieces as well to help help the teacher and the parent or the coach.
Yes, there's approximately 300 drills arranged in a specific sequence that anyone can follow, and the demonstrators actually are my grandkids who it's kind of the second time I've gone through this. Did it with my kids when they were young, and now I'm doing it with my grandchildren, and they're kind of the final guinea pigs for the drills.
You have some shortcut or short form names for certain activities, like OI, which stands for off ice, P for puck, F for fast, HC, Hockey Canada, and other abbreviations. Are those something you developed, or are those something that are common in the industry?
No, those are completely developed by myself. I figured there were so many, like I said, thousands of drills out there. I was trying to differentiate and identify the properties involved in each drill, and that's basically the result of that.
How long did it take you, Bob, to complete this book? This is, again, a very ambitious first book effort.
Well, it's 30 or 35 years of experience teaching kids, but probably about 3 years to actually pull it together. I had all the information. It took just a matter of coordinating it all and documenting it.
Have you been getting any response? Have you shared this with other coaches and instructors, and have you been getting feedback from your content at this point, or is this fairly new, the release
of the
book?
Well, this is new, and we've had a little contact response from Sweden and in Japan, and also in the United States, and of course some of it across Canada, but it's not well known yet.
Your primary target, I guess, is anyone that's involved in the sport of hockey.
Basically, anyone who wants to skate, and it's for beginner skating, and beginners define in the book as it's not age limited. It could be 60 years old, or it could be 2 years old. So anyone who wants to learn how to skate, and believe it or not, there are a lot of adults who want to learn how to skate.
And it's not confined to simply the hockey skate approach, then. It's just skating in general.
Yeah, number one is skating, and number two it would be for hockey.
Fabulous. A very very extensive read and very detailed. You obviously have wonderful observational skills in order to do this, and with 35 years of coaching. What was the most outstanding or the most unusual thing that happened as a coach that you think is kind of a fun thing to look back on?
I suppose just watching the smile and watching into the eyes of a youth when they can start doing difficult drills that they couldn't accomplish earlier, and all of a sudden they see the light, and all of a sudden they can do something that they thought they never could do.
Any of the kids that you coached throughout your years, any of those go on to pursue a professional career?
Yeah, several ended up playing in Europe and the National Hockey League, and quite a few went to college. across North America.
Incredible. And do they keep in touch, or is this just something that you have discovered from watching the game and watching the players?
Well, they do keep in touch, but they kind of bump into each other from time to time, and also through their parents, we bump into each other still at rinks.
Yes, and do you wear pads when you bump into each other? I mean, that's kind of an inside joke for hockey players, I guess, huh?
Right, but at my age, I'm actually still playing old-timers hockey, and
are you really?
Years old, so.
I'm sorry, how old again? I missed that.
I'm 72,
I thought that's
what
you
playing said. Old-timers hockey on with teams that are 70-plus.
Is that a fact? Now, share with my listeners a little of that story. I'm fascinated. I am approaching what I would call those years. And getting on the ice, that doesn't alarm me. It's something I probably would enjoy doing myself. But how's the contact in that age range?
Well, no slap shots are allowed. No contact is allowed. But, of course, even in minor hockey with kids where there's no body contact allowed, you still run into each other accidentally. So, yeah, at that age, there's no body contact, but we certainly are running into each other accidentally and running into the boards once in a while.
Sort of like flag football, except a little more potentially violent, I guess, or injury prone.
Well, it's just that the game is so fast that you can't always stop when you want, and therefore you do a lot of bumping.
That's fascinating. I would love to see that featured on a television special. I think that would make it a fun sport to watch. In addition to the hockey method, Volume 1, I see, is what you've highlighted here. Are you planning to do an additional book on this subject?
Yes, this is specifically for beginners, kids that are, so as soon as they start off, there's a big drop-off from the time they, as soon as they put on the first pair of skates to the time they play the first game, and that's, I'm trying to fill in that gap, but the second volume, I'm halfway through now, and it's getting down to more concrete, specific basics of hockey, skating, passing, and shooting primarily.
Explain for my listeners who don't understand the game of hockey a little what a puck is and how that involves the players and the game, how important that is.
The game, of course, is five against five and plus the two goaltenders. And the puck, of course, you move it around and try to score with the puck, just like a basketball into a net. But the trick with hockey is kind of a chess game in that it's not what you do with the puck, it's what you do when you don't have the puck. So it's the other four people who don't have, or the nine people actually, who don't have the puck. Where do you go, when, how, and why?
And the puck itself is a hard piece of rubber in a spherical design, kind of a flattened sphere. Looks sort of like something that used to be sold over the counter as a Twinkie or as a Hostess product. I had forgotten what it was called. But are there different weights in the game of hockey as far as the puck? I mean, do younger players get a little lighter hockey puck than the senior and advanced players?
Well, the normal size puck is and weight is used by all ages and all levels. But there is a lighter, smaller puck just for the early beginners. Sometimes those are utilized, but not necessarily. They can use a standard puck. Also, for specific and more advanced drills, sometimes use a heavier puck just to strengthen your wrists when you're shooting.
Bob, explain or share with my listeners in a couple of sentences or paragraphs why they should get a copy of this book and why this is an important addition to the game of hockey.
Well, if any parent walks to any arena watching kids practice, including their own, you'll notice they'll probably notice that nine kids out of ten can't do the drills that are being done on the ice for these early beginners. They're led through different drills that they just have no idea how to do it, and they just can't do it. But they continue to practice these drills that they cannot accomplish. So something is missing, and parents probably are to blame mostly because as soon as a kid puts on a pair of skates, they expect them to play hockey the next day on a team and be able to pass the puck and play the game. And unfortunately, they schedule games right away, and the kids just aren't ready for that. And so the whole book is based on the premise that kids are not ready for that. There's a big lag missing there, or a link missing there. There's a lot of learning to do before you even start thinking about playing hockey games. So the whole book basically takes the kid from the first time they put on a pair of skates until they play their first game. Right now, they do that on day one. I suggest they spend the time in these 300 drills to spend a year learning how to do the drills first and then get into the complex hockey drills.
And Bob, did you include some personal stories in your book, or is it all instructional in nature?
Well, there's a few stories about how I got started skating myself when we didn't really have coaches. Actually, we didn't have rinks.
Yeah, what did you skate on, I guess? That would be a puddle out in the backyard that frozen, a frozen pond, perhaps?
Yeah, number one was skating in the backyard on the front street on the hard snow and kind of half ice, half snow. Secondly, of course, we skated, we walked about a mile to a lake, a fairly large lake, and did a lot of skating on the lake. So I learned really skating on the lake and on the streets in a small town.
I remember those stories personally as well, having grown up in Canada. I remember flooding a section of my backyard and creating a hockey rink, engage in a hockey game. So this is an interesting book, and you've done a phenomenal job on approaching the fundamentals and also the details of how to play the game of hockey. The title of the book, again, is The Hockey Method, Volume 1, Beginner Skating, Beginner Puck Control for Parents and Instructors. Bob DeLaSalle has been my guest. Bob, where can my listeners get a copy of your book?
On Amazon or any bookstore. Basically, if they don't have it in stock, they can get it in 2 or 3 days, chapters, etc.
Now, Bob, have you started a website yet?
Yes, there's a website, and it's called thehockeymethod.com. And the books also can be tracked down on Google or Amazon or any bookstore.
Under The Hockey Method.
That's correct.
Listeners, you can also do a search under Bob's last name. Last name is spelled DeLaSalle, and it's Bob is the first name. Bob, thank you for joining me today and sharing your story. Look forward to talking with you when Volume 2 is completed.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. For Indie Book Publishing, Trafford Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled, My Magic Glasses. And our author, Virginia Butler Gray, joins me from somewhere in the Northwest. No, it's the Northeast. It's Maine, mm-hmm, in the United States of America. Welcome to the program, Virginia.
I'm delighted to be here today.
You are an author, but also have had a background as a teacher. Where did this concept of wanting to print and publish a book titled My Magic Glasses come from?
Actually, it started when I was dealing with some stress as a teacher, and we all know teachers have lots of stress. And as I dealt with my own stress, I started noticing that children today also were having a lot of stress in their lives. And people are so busy, you know, they really don't have a lot of time to deal with the stresses that children have. So I started trying to look at what were the situations that children find themselves in that caused that stress. And I thought about, you know, they're afraid to try something new. They want to do something, but their friend says, I won't be your friend if you do that and don't play with me, you know, all those kinds of typical things. And so as I thought about that, I thought, how can I help children deal with this? So that's where my idea for the book came from, my experience, and then looking at children and saying, what can I do to help them deal with the stresses they have in their life today?
I would think that Maine would be a stress-free environment. What type of stresses are you finding? Are they experiencing the same type of stresses that kids in the South of the United States are experiencing? Do you think this is a universal problem?
Oh, I think it's very universal. I think, you know, there's issues of having your feelings get hurt, being sad, being afraid of making a mistake, not being afraid to try something new, all those sorts of things that all children have in common, and just learning ways to deal with those to take that stress away from them.
You've penned a short book, 20 pages. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where did you feel this book would most impact? Is this for a really young reader?
Well, I think it starts there. I did a lot of research before I started writing my book, and I researched other children's books by authors like Wayne Dyer and Louise Hay, and Deepak Chopra has some books out to help children with starting their life off kind of on the right foot, so to speak. And I looked at their books, and I did a lot of research on the brain and, you know, how the brain develops belief systems and those kinds of things. So did a lot of research before I started writing. And then it just took off kind of from there.
Other authors that have impressed you. I understand by reading your book that Dr. Seuss may have been an influence on your style.
Right. Well, being a teacher in the early age classrooms, I've taught from kindergarten to like third grade. And being in those classrooms year after year, you read a lot of literature to students. And I knew that in order to write this kind of a book, I needed to have that rhyme and that rhythm. I also noticed that my students liked books that had a repeating line in them. So I wanted to be sure I put a repeating line in my book. And that line was, so I put on my glasses, and what do I see? And it gives them a chance to find solutions for those problems.
Fabulous. Share, if you will, some of your reading style and also your writing style by perhaps an excerpt from the book.
Okay, let me just pull my book from the shelf here. It starts out with really having children take a look inside themselves. And so in the very beginning of my book, it starts with, my glasses are magic, I use them to see. When things don't feel right the way I want to be. My glasses are magic, look through them and see. My glasses are magic, they see inside me. Whenever I'm wondering which way I should go, I put on these glasses and magically know. Though my brain is important for thinking and such, my heart's the controller that keeps me in touch. My glasses go with me wherever I roam. I count on their magic. I'm never alone. So it kind of gets the kids in that idea of the glasses being able to be with them wherever they go and help them look inside.
You've also included a lot of photos. One has a young child with a big teardrop coming down their cheek, something that many children can relate to. What was that particular segment about?
It was all about when children feel sad. And actually, that was the page that was the most difficult for me to find a picture of, because when you're looking through stock photos, you do not find a lot of pictures of children that are sad.
That's true.
Of happy pictures, but very few sad ones. But I think children, when they feel those things, need to know, what do I do with this emotion? You know, how do I handle this? And what are some choices I can make to make myself feel better?
How long did it take, Virginia, to complete this? Rhythmic writing is, I would think, complicated.
That part actually was not complicated. That was probably the easier part of the book. But there was a lot of thought that went around in my head for a long time before I put the words to the page. And then when I was ready to write, I kind of all the ideas just fell into place and the words just came spewing out.
It's beautiful, beautifully done. I love the color. I love the fact that you have actual photos. A lot of children's books have sketches and other things in it. This one is a little different from that perspective. Did you specifically target a different feel for the book to try to make it stand out on the shelf?
I definitely just wanted pictures of a variety of children because I thought that way children could make better connections. I didn't want it to be a character that was the same all the way through the book. So that definitely I did set out to do a little differently than the typical children's book.
How would you introduce this to our listeners and get them fascinated not only with the concept but also have a desire to go out and get their own personal copy of My Magic Glasses?
Right. Well, I think one thing that kind of sets this book apart is the idea of paying attention to how you feel in order to take care of yourself and take charge of your emotions. So the responsibility on fixing issues is really for the child themselves. And I think other books sometimes try to persuade kids to do the right thing or to follow a more prescribed rule of action. But I wanted kids to look in their heart, and I wanted them to think about a variety of ways to make themselves feel better and then find a positive solution that works for them. So it's really a more individualized approach that allows some flexibility and multiple solutions.
Now, Virginia, have you always desired to be an author, or is this something that's relatively new?
Not really. It came to me, like I said, as I dealt with my own stress, and I thought, how can I help children deal with theirs? And when you teach, you seem to see the same issues come up day after day after day. And I thought, what can I do that would help them make sense of this and, help them with those kind of issues? So I believe this model of teaching children how to will kind of empower them and give them confidence and that trust in themselves to make those decisions. And hopefully they'll see themselves as capable, and that can only be a good thing.
And did you include any of your early childhood experiences personally in the concept of the book?
No, I really didn't. I just looked at the students I'd been teaching for about 25 years, so I've gathered lots of data on kids and the issues they have, and I just kind of used those issues to help me compile my book.
Other authors that you admire? I'm assuming Dr. Seuss for sure, but any other children's authors?
Oh, there are just so many I couldn't even think off the top of my head, but I have a full library upstairs in my home where I have all kinds of children's books, so there's always lots of sources for me to go to.
What's been the feedback? Have you shared this with younger audience and had them express their either appreciation, understanding, or any feedback on the contents of your book?
Absolutely. I just love reading this book out loud to children, and of course the first class that got to hear it was my class at school. And they gave me lots of positive feedback. But when you read aloud to children, it gives you the wonderful opportunity to add emphasis to the story with your voice. And there's nothing in the world that is better than watching the faces of children as you read, because they really become immersed in the story with you. It's kind of like a creative dance. It's always fresh every time you read it to a new group of children. And the reward comes with the comments that the children make and their discussions. Often during and after the reading, children would make comments, and once they heard that repeating line in the story, they tend to join in and say it with you each time you come to it. So it's really, that's why I wanted the rhyme and I wanted that repeating line, because I had seen over the years in the classroom that really pulls them right into the story with you.
Were there any challenges that you had to overcome to get this printed?
I would say it was just the challenge of writing a book for the first time, but I found Balboa Press to be really great with that, and they really took you step by step through each part of the process so that it wasn't overwhelming.
There, I'm assuming, is an underlying message that comes through, and what was the main target underlying message that you wanted to convey?
I would say this book was written really to facilitate the empowerment of children in a really fun but practical way. And my hope was that My Magic Glasses would promote independence and confidence, and that as children and their families would share this story together, they would see things from a different perspective or be able to work out a variety of solutions that would help their children.
This is a unique, resourceful, and very positive approach to teaching children the positive values that are important in growing up. The title again is My Magic Glasses. Our author, Virginia Butler Gray, has joined me from Maine in the United States of America. Virginia, where can my listeners get a copy of this book?
You can get my book through my publisher online, which is Balboa Press. You can also find it at Barnes & Noble, or you can get it at Amazon. I know currently at Amazon it says they're out of stock, but it's important to know that my book is printed on demand. So if they order a copy, it will be printed and sent to them in a timely manner.
Are you working on a sequel to this book?
Not actually a sequel, but I am thinking about other books for children, kind of mulling it around in my mind.
Congratulations on the completion of this one. I think it's very well done. Parents, grandparents, children will want to get a copy of this. My Magic Glasses, Virginia Butler Gray, has been my guest. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
For Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.